This is another program of Buscando America. I am Eduardo de Landeros Tierra, and I'm going to be joined, of course, by Ivan Rivero, who's going to be has a wonderful lineup for us. Welcome, Ivan.
Gracias, Eduardo.
And also, we have somebody else coming, right?
Right, we have Jacobo Páez, who has a lot of important and interesting things to say about the African legacy in the Americas. He is a master's in literature and has explored these themes about development of the, you know, the population in the diversity within the Spanish-speaking population in Central America, especially in his native country of Guatemala. And he's going to be joining us later on today.
Great. Also, we're going to have with us on the telephone Lucelene Lira, and she's going to give us an update from Brazil on an event coming up on March 7th. And so we will be talking to her on the phone about that. So in the meantime, we've got some música para ustedes en aquí. Va.
Pensando em você, pensando no vazio que você deixou, acordei e fiz uma canção. Música.
Lucilene Lita on the telephone for an event coming up on Tuesday, March 7th at Liberty Hall. Lucilene, are you there?
Hey, hi.
Hey, welcome again
to... having me on the air.
Right. Well, Lucilene, tell us what's coming up.
Yeah, we have a really pretty cool event. We have a representative of the Brazilian Landless Workers Movement coming to Portland. And I have put together, it's only a 3-day, she's going to be here for 3 days, but one is going to be an evening at the Liberty Hall, 7 p.m. And the title they use is like, you know, Latin American Shift to the Left, and also focus on how the MST, as the largest social movement in Latin America, has been able to organize the people and really push forward struggles against privatization, struggles against corporation power, struggle against the privatization of food systems. So really try to mobilizing the working people, indigenous people, women, youth, in a really large movement for social change.
And tell me, so who else is, tell us a little bit about Andrea.
Yeah, Andrea Ferreira, she's like a 32 or 31-year-old woman, and she's right now she's the member for the National Political Education and Leadership Development Sector, and she comes from the education sector in which they develop a curriculum and they run their own elementary and middle schools and sometimes even high school, MST schools in the settlements in the area that they have occupied and they have won. So the MST has a really strong network of teachers in which they themselves were able to provide the education, the formal education, to become teachers so they can teach in their own MST schools. And a lot of the curriculum is really developed to take it to the perspective of, you know, rural families, peasants, and the struggle for land in Brazil.
Okay, Lucilene, once again, when and where?
Yeah, it's March 7th at 7 p.m. at Liberty Hall, which, you know, Liberty Hall is located on, let me see, like, looking here. Yeah.
311 North Ivy Street.
Yeah, Liberty Hall at 111 North Ivy Street between south of Fremont, 2 blocks west of Vancouver Avenue. And if anyone wants to contact me, they could, like, either call my phone, which 360-259-1879, and she's going to be speaking as well at Portland State University and at noon at the Smith Union 327, and also at Lewis and Clark College at 4 p.m. And it's going to be in the Upper Tamarack Building. So yeah, there's three chances to see and talk with Andrea. In the evening, we'll be showing part of a film called The Landless Through the Americas, which talk about the history and the issues that the MST is fighting for, and also how they structure as an organization, because it's a mass movement. There are thousands and thousands of people involved in the movement.
Gracias.
So it's going to be pretty cool.
Gracias, Luisa Lenny.
Oh, muchas gracias. Sí, cuídate.
Ok, tchau.
Ok, tchau.
Okay, and we are back. I am back. Ivan has some news for us. So, Ivan, go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you, Eduardo. We have a few sort of calendar issues here. First, by Pekun, we have organizing a march on a walk to rally against the latest immigration bill called the Sensenbrenner Bill, and also to rally for a fair and realistic reform on immigration. This is going to happen March the 18th, and the time is still to be announced. The place, though, has been defined, and that's going to be at the Pioneer Courthouse Square. And for more information, you can call Pekun at 503-982-0243, or you can log on to www.pcun.org. We have a number of events in protest to the Sensenbrenner Bill, and the calendar is looking sort of busy. I'd like to start by the invitation by a coalition of organizations, including Portland Voice, Pekun in Woodburn, and AFC in Portland, and Causa of Salem. This coalition of organizations is getting together to rally on Saturday, March the 4th, and that's very close, Saturday, March the 4th at noon at Pioneer Square. And people would be marching for the respect of all workers, because no worker is illegal. No human being is illegal. The march will be protesting the Sensenbrenner Bill, which is a piece of anti-immigrant legislation that passed the House recently in December 16th of 2005. The bill is now going to the Senate for approval in March, and therefore there's number of rallies that are being promoted now for organizations that are against it. It could pass. This thing could pass in its entirety, or parts of it could be introduced in other anti-immigrant bills. If this bill passes in the Senate, it will become the most inhumane immigration law that the U.S. has seen in the last 70 years, and will affect Americans, immigrants, and U.S. citizens alike. We want to invite you again to this rally Saturday, March the 4th, 2006, beginning at noon at Portland. At Portland's Pioneer Square. The organizations you can call in order to get more information are Portland Voice at 503-233-6787, Pecon and Woodburn at 503-982-0243, Portland AFSC 503-230-9427, or in Salem, Causa 503-763-1694. I also like to say that there's going to be So if you need more information about how this is going to happen, we have also an immigration forum that will deal with learning from the past for the struggles of the future. This is going to be taking place Wednesday, March the 1st of this year, 7 p.m. at the SIEIU Local 49 Hall at 3536 Southeast 26th Avenue in Portland, Oregon. You can learn about the march. You can learn about the struggle, the sustained struggle of immigrants, and this, and how dangerous this censor bribery bill could be if passed through the Senate.
Great. There's some important things coming up, so I'm glad that you are you announced this, Yvonne.
I also wanted to announce too, for those people who would like to join. Portland Bus sent a message. They're needing, in preparation for this rallies, they need to have a couple volunteers for the next 2 weekends. And so I'd like to send this invitation from Romeo Sosa. It's
great. Go ahead.
Leader, yeah. And we're seeking volunteers who canvass flyers to invite the public to this event. Saturday, February the 18th, and the Sunday of that weekend on the 19th, starting 10 o'clock in the morning, and the next weekend, Saturday, February the 25th, and the 26th, which is a Sunday. And the way that you can connect with VOS is by calling. They have a new office, 503-233-6787. And I'd like to repeat the number, 503-233-6787. This is a wonderful way in which you could volunteer a little bit of your time and effort.
Bueno, es que estamos tratando de ser bilingüe aquí, entonces yo creo es tiempo para anunciar todo,
claro,
o algo en español. ¿Qué piensas, Iván?
Claro que sí.
Okay.
Eduardo. Bueno, estimados escuchas, estamos aquí en Buscando América. Estamos ahora entrando a nuestra sección en español. Y como ustedes saben, para aquellos que hablan algo de inglés o mucho inglés, hemos estado dando lo que es nuestro calendario comunitario y algunos eventos que se van a llevar a cabo aquí en Portland. En primer lugar, quisiéramos invitarlos a la marcha que se está organizando para con relación a todos los trabajadores y el hecho de que ninguno de estos trabajadores, ningún ser humano es ilegal. Para esto se va a hacer una marcha, una protesta en contra de la propuesta de ley de Sensenbrenner, que es una de las, pues es una ley antiinmigrante que ya pasó en la casa, en la Cámara, con fecha del 16 de septiembre de 2005. Ahora está pasando para su aprobación en el Senado en marzo. Si esta ley fuese a pasar en su totalidad o alguna de sus partes que pudiera ser introducida en otros proyectos de ley antiinmigrantes, sería realmente algo muy, muy trágico para la población en general, no solamente la población inmigrante, sino la población de ciudadanos ya estadounidenses. Si este proyecto de ley fuera a pasar en el Senado, representaría la ley más inhumana de inmigración que se ha pasado en los Estados Unidos en los últimos 70 años, afectando, como ya dije, tanto americanos como inmigrantes, no solamente mexicanos, sino todos los inmigrantes. Pedimos su ayuda, su presencia para poder parar este proyecto de ley. Asistan el sábado 4 de marzo de este año, 12 del día, a la Plaza Pioneer Square.
Okay, entonces aquí hay música de México.
Ay, qué contentos hemos llegado a estos tiempos que ahora se ven. Varios amigos que ni lo creen. Ya no es el tiempo del porfirista chamba o cuando menos de rayado. Los levantaban muy de mañana, como a los bueyes a trabajar. Ya me despido de mis amigos, ay, me dispensan la indiscreción. Tiempos amargos del porfirista, y aquí les canto en mi canción.
Francisco Villa nació con el valor mexicano para ayudar a los pobres contra el yugo del tirano. Villa salió del Parral a defender su partido, por eso los federales lo trataban de bandido. Villa con un compañero hizo correr a 50 con su pistola en la mano y su rifle 30-30. Ay, qué cabeza de Villa, que ni un momento vacila, como el fortín más pesado del cerrito de la pila. Los de Camargo dirán, los que tuvieron presentes, cuántos pelones quedaron antes de pasar el puente. Ay, qué combate tan fuerte, el que Villa ha preparado, la primera contraseña será un paño colorado. Entrale Pascua al Orozco, tú decías que era la fiebre, que en el sitio de Reyanes tú corriste como liebre. Gritaba el mocho Regón, aquí me hicieron salvaje, ya me acabaron los yaquis en este rancho del Guaje. Pobres de los federales que defendieron Torreón contra las fuerzas de Villa, será parar un ciclón.
Acontecimientos de fin del año pasado y principios del presente. Era un ministro de Hacienda del presidente Obregón quien quería ser presidente y formó una revolución. Me hizo Guadalupe Sánchez y el general Aguilar. Del Castillo y Prieto Gómez fueron con él a pelear. El general Manuel Dieguez con el general Estrada se unieron a la bolita allá por Guadalajara. En Yucatán también hubo quien siguió la pelotera. Pobrecita de mi patria, hoy ya no es lo que antes era. En Veracruz su gobierno Don Adolfo estableció, echó castillos al aire y todo se le malogró.
esperanza es acción muy principal. Después de Maltrata, Córdoba y Jalapa y Orizaba, y así el federal triunfante hacia Veracruz marchaba. Puerto México y Campeche, Tuxtlán y Guadalajara, al gobierno se rindieron de la noche a la mañana. 3, 4, 5 meses perduró esta situación, mas don Álvaro y su gente fue el más fuerte y fue el ganón. Ahora queda la tristeza del rudo golpe sufrido, mucha sangre derramada para la vida que ha servido. A La Habana, Nueva York, nadie sabe dónde se halla y pueda que sea mejor. Nobles mexicanos, no hagamos revolución, seamos buenos ciudadanos para bien de la nación.
And since I am a fan of vinyl, records, that is, I'm playing some vinyls that we have in our music collection here on KBOO. This collection of vinyls is a collection of corridos from the early historic recordings edited by Professor Guillermo Hernandez, and it's called The Mexican Revolution, The Heroes and Events from 1910 to 1920. So we're going to keep listening to these corridos on to the top of the hour on vinyl.
Te lo dije que no le fuera hasta entrar. Pues yo quiero pelear y yo voy a buscar que me llamen un día general. Lo que vas a lograr y te vas a encontrar una riata en que te han de colgar por nagual. Ay, manito, les pegaron duro en Ocotlán. Y te creímos.
And of course this is KBOO Portland.
Yo quiero vacilón, ya la revolución con mi Mauser le voy a atorar. Entonces de temor seguro va a temblar hasta el mocho Alvarito Obregón corazón. No te burles, que soy hombre de los de valor. ¡Ay, mi hermano! ¡Qué regüeyte hizo nuestro señor Simondor! Yo me voy con Maicoto, me voy con Vigilo, con Sánchez me voy a pilear. Tú que te vas a ir, eres puro hablador, y cara ve de pico nomás correlón. Pues entonces, dime cómo la he de rebalsar. Ven, mi hermano, vámonos las a tronar. Pues dices bien, compadre, vamos a darle que es mole de olla. Si no te agüites, ni vayas a la revolución porque te dejarán cadáver. Mira que yo Colón y mis hijos Cristobalito. Échame aquella canción que le cantabas a tu hermosa Petronila. 3 piedras y voy a toser para después cantar.
De comer un durazno desde la raíz hasta el hueso, no le hace que sea trigueño, será mi gusto y por eso. Me de comer un durazno desde la raíz hasta el hueso, no le hace que sea trigueño, será mi gusto y por eso. Adiós, linda Petronila, me voy llorando y te dejo. Si no me piensas querer, con la esperanza me alejo. Adiós, linda Petronila, me voy llorando y te dejo. Si no me piensas querer, con la esperanza me alejo.
And that was our vinyl record. We're going to continue the rest of this program with Iván Rivero and Jacobo. Bienvenido, Jacobo.
Gracias por invitarme a tu programa.
Qué bueno que estás aquí, Iván.
Y sí, Eduardo. Como decíamos, tenemos con nosotros al señor Jacobo Payés. que es tiene una maestría en crítica literaria con especialización en la imagen negra en Centroamérica. El señor Payés tiene una amplia experiencia en la definición de culturas, de pueblos que contribuyeron al desarrollo de la población y a la cuestión étnica en nuestros países. Pero quisiera empezar por el principio y también quisiera que el anuncio fuese en inglés, si te parece bien, Eduardo.
Sí, sí. Dale.
Gracias. So we're here in Buscando América. And today we have a guest, is Jacobo Payés, who is a master's in literary criticism with specialization in the black image in Central America. Jacobo.
Thank you.
Thanks. Well, we had the opportunity to really bring all these issues home as a result of the 16th African Film Festival that was held, as always, at the Cascade campus at Portland Community College. This event has been in the making already, as I said, for 16 years, as a product of Mary Holstrom, who apparently grew up in South Africa.
Yes, she did.
Right. And then among many other organizers and volunteers of great caliber, I'd like to also mention Michael Dembro, who did an excellent job. But
right.
Also, I want to say that for the first time, and this is why we have this topics in Buscando America, for the first time, the high points of the festival were the African legacy in Mexico, something that many people don't know about, something that has perhaps been diluted to such a point that many of us do not know that we have an African ancestry. But when we listen to the music, when we hear, when we see things, when we look at people in the coastal areas of Mexico, we see that there is a definite inheritance that we have from African populations. There were two important events, one on Thursday night, right?
Right.
With the showing of that movie, La Raíz Olvidada.
Right, and then we had Saturday.
Right.
Which was our community symposium or community discussion.
Right.
Which I have some, I would like to talk a little bit about that. I have some
right.
comments.
Right. And Jacobo was there at all the events, so we'd like to do a review of all of these. And I just wanted to say real quickly that the Spanish words may not say anything to you if you're an English speaker, but the title of the documentary was The Forgotten Root. And those are the kind of things that we want to discuss with Jacobo, with his experience in all these things.
Well, to me, it was pleasant to see that finally the work that we have been doing is coming to a point where organizations are being involved and is bringing a light to what we have always known, that the history, the written history, is different to the real history that compound the groups of the Mexicans and Central Americans and, of course, the whole Latin America.
Right, and I wanted to say something that perhaps has been forgotten too, is that Mexico, the New Spain, used to be a really, really vast regional area where there was a mixing of cultures. This area expanded from California, Texas, Nevada, Colorado, parts of Colorado, etc., all the way down to what is now Guatemala. And then even parts, other parts of Central America that I'm not really aware of, but, you know, there were then, like in the mid-1800s, there were secessional movements where Chiapas, Yucatan, and Guatemala wanted their independence, and eventually Guatemala did become an independent country.
Yes, through the colony, even Guatemala had independence because it was one of the main places that were used for the Spaniards when they were in the colony days.
Right. Well, it is about the colony that I like to focus on today, and sort of the incredible movements of people that happened during this area. As you probably know, at the beginning of the conquest in 1519, we learned from I guess the keynote speaker, Dr. Maria Elisa Velasquez, who's a researcher at the INAH, and that's the Institute, the National Institute for Archaeology and History, and is a historian, and she was really, really good in explaining how the first Africans got to the new lands.
Correct. I see what a lot of people get confused is that in Latin America, before the Mafa, which is the Holocaust, in Latin America there was mixing because there was not the racist concept that came after the 1600. It wasn't there, so there was a lot of mixing before it became negative to be a black person.
Right, so in other words, there were among the people, among the soldiers that were coming to America, that landed in America, there were, along with the Cortes expedition, there were black people.
There were, even when Alvarado left Mexico to Central America, he took a few of the soldiers that were with him to Guatemala. They were blacks. There are records that they were blacks.
Right, but at this, you know, of course there was hierarchy, but it was never like the you know, sort of the assumption that if you were black or more tan, then there would be this sort of idea of subservience.
No, it was after the castas. Once the Spain established themselves, then the movement of the castas became movement of the time, and that's when the black people became the base of the society, the lower part.
Right. Could you explain to our public a little bit about the castas?
Well, the castas originally supposed to started in India, and it was transformed in the new continent where the Spaniards that came from Spain held the higher positions in any place in government status, to the point that the sons of the Spaniards who were born in America could never have a position over them, which at the end became the movements of the independence.
And that was 1810. Although there was like a really interesting development in those 300 years that people arrived, and then all of a sudden the indigenous population was decimated because of germs and steel, and then of course because of technological advantage, and there was also a humanist movement that made illegal to enslave any of the indigenous people, and therefore there was an immigration, or like the people's search for black labor. Actually, they enslaved people from Western Africa and brought them by, do you remember the numbers?
One of the, I'm going to get to your question. Mm-hmm. One of the main persons who had to do with the, with the results of what the black people suffered in Latin America was De Las Casas. De Las Casas wrote to Spain about all the tragedies that the indigenous people were living in here, and created what is called the Black Legend, but he meant the Black Legend toward the indigenous people. And he recommended that the black people will come and take the jobs that they were eliminating the indigenous people in the life of the culture. They were almost being eliminated. And with the black people coming as slaves, that was what changed the idea of what a black person was.
Right, although this process took a long time.
It was. Right. It was about 200 years.
Right. And one of the things that is important to say here is that we cannot really, or as we saw during the symposium, was that we cannot really make some sort of a template and say that the development of population or mestizaje, which is miscegenation, happened in the same way that occurred in America. Well, in the United States.
There is different, completely different scenarios, because in the 1800s or the beginning of the 1900s, when Vasconcelos developed the idea of the fifth race, La Raza de Bronce.
Vasconcelos is?
Vasconcelos was person who was in charge of the education in Mexico at the beginning of 1801, close from that period of time. That's when the idea of the fifth race came in. And the whole idea was to mix everybody to get the result that he was looking, the erasing of the Negro indigenous and the erasing of the true black, visible blacks, into this raza of bronze, which will have the brown color, the vanilla color.
In other words, the copper race.
The copper race, right. Exactly.
What I think it's, there's two things that I'd like to address here. One of them is sort of the sort of discourse that has happened in Mexico about, you know, what is to be a mestizo, you know, a person of, say, mixed ancestry. That's one. And the other thing that I wanted to talk about is about the iconography, the sort of, in this, there wasn't really a battle of caste or castas in Mexico, but there was, you know, there were times, like during the 17th century, that it's been documented that every person had a name, a denomination, and then there were 54 denominations according to what you were, you know, if you were a quarter white, and then you had African blood, and then you had Indian blood. There was a name, a code name for you, and then there was a complete immobility, in which privilege, money, etc., was given according to the system.
See, and I believe that's one of the main reasons that the castas didn't work through the colony, because people used to change from one sector to the other according to what the government was giving as a prices. Like you have the case that an Indian that mixed with a black person will give a free Indian person. So a lot of black people were mixing with the indigenous people in order for to have their sons or daughters be free, because with the mixture of the indigenous people. There was other movements too that the government or the colonial created a document that is called Gracias al Sacar, which is la cédula. And with the Gracias al Sacar, regardless of your visible color, you were called close to the white rainbow, and you will get more benefits. So this became so popular that the price of the castas of the cédula de Gracias al Sacar in less than 50 years tripled of how it started to, you know.
So was this some sort of an ID that gave you certain privilege?
And that's exactly.
Right.
That's exactly.
Now, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about visibility, because I think that this is still, you know, we're still seeing this sort of phenomena when we have, you know, a broadcaster that where only people who look white, you know, who look like, you know, the ideal European sort of person gets to act, you know, gets to be seen in Mexican TV, while most of the people who are regular people, you know, like who are mestizos, we could say, the real Mexican people are always portrayed as either the maid, the nanny, the bad guy, the criminal. And so how, you know, I wanted to talk to you about this issue of visibility. And, you know, number one, first in its historical context, and then how we're seeing that related to contemporary images.
And that's one of the things that you can see as a failure of the Vasconcelos idea, because on the society right now in Mexico, the visible white is the one that shows on TV. If you don't know Mexico and you just watch Mexico through the telenovelas, you would not know that there's indigenous and black people in Mexico, because the majority of all the actors are visible whites.
Okay, that's stop right there. I'm really curious. That visibility, what we're seeing on television and in magazines and the newspapers, that being white is somehow more attractive and prettier. Or can you address that phenomenon? Even within my own family, for example, I have a brother. He came out blonde, right? And then there was then there was me, right?
That's right.
So there was this terrible tension in my family between me and my brother, and I know this is not just my experience. So can you sort of speak to that phenomenon?
Well, this is a very old phenomenon. I think the French people took it to the high levels. I remember reading stories where they used to even put bleach in their faces so they can look really, really pale. That was the extreme that the French people did. So the white idea, and you can see it through everything, through the Europeans. See, the reason why we have this white idea as a success is because in the whole Latin American, the education is European. You get education through the European mentality, and then you start learning about Michelangelo. Everything that comes from Europe, and those things come with the white aesthetic, you know. And that is the reason why, if you want to feel like you succeed, then you will have white secretaries, people there, you know. But that's the idea. Remember that even in the 18th century, the black people used to be measured by the size of the head and all this to prove that they didn't have the ability to be called humans. They were less than animals.
But I think that all of these theories are coming from the encyclopedists, you know, the Voltaire and all these people who had who developed the idea of the noble savage.
Exactly.
Right. And so this continued sort of dehumanization of people has continued, sometimes even unaddressed completely, you know, and we see it in our families, because most Latinos, you know, most families have a rainbow of colors within their children. You have four kids, and you have a morenito, you know, a more tan, and then you have the blonde blue eyes in the same family. So I think that this things never get addressed out of shame.
Exactly, and you can see that a lot of the Hollywood movies do have a lot of influence too on how Latin American people react to colors. You can see Tarzan as an example. He grows up in Africa, but you never see him having any relation with any black females in Africa. It's until Jane shows to Africa that he goes and have a relation. That is telling you right there that the promotion of those days was due to not mix. See? So those things are placed into their mind without us thinking that that's what is happening. You say King Kong. King Kong is a movie for kids. That is not true. It has a tremendous message. King Kong, before this white actor shows into the movie, he eats everything that they put for him as a sacrifice. But as soon as they place this white person as a sacrifice, he doesn't eat her. He goes and takes her and showers her and all this. So this that projection of protecting the white race is placed in our minds since we're little.
Right. So do we have a break? Should we continue?
Yeah. I just want to stop. You just mentioned another key word that we could do a whole program on, and that's the idea of shame. Or could we do a lot of that? But we won't do that today. So here's some more corridos, and from vinyl. I just love vinyl.
If you need more, precioso que por decir la verdad pacifique generoso. Tras muchos días amargos en que no hubo religión, ya han abierto las iglesias y se hizo la rebelión. Las leyes de la reforma que habían sido letra muerta tomaron vigor y forma al terminar de la huerta. Vino como consecuencia una cruel persecución.
Record vinyl set. It's called The Mexican Revolution, and it's on Folk Lyric Records. It's out of print, of course, but it's a collection of corridos from early historic recordings from the period of 1910 to 1920. Iván.
Sí,
y Jacobo, otra vez, bienvenido. Okay, ¿podemos continuar la nuestra plática?
Pues ahora sí vamos a seguir con esta plática, pero ahora en español, para aquellos que nos escuchan en español y para ustedes que también están practicando su español. Como les dije, con nosotros está el señor Jacobo Vallés, que tiene una maestría en crítica literaria con especialización en la imagen negra en Centroamérica. Él es originario de Guatemala.
Correcto, Iván.
Sí, y pues quisiera hablar un poquito, o sea, para aquellos de nuestros escuchas que saben, o sea, la Nueva España, las tierras conquistadas por la dominación española al principio del siglo XVI, abarcaban desde Texas, California, hasta partes de Colorado y Nevada, hasta abajo, claro, lo que ahora es Centroamérica. Y tú, como especialista, quisiera que nos platicaras un poquito de cuál es el fenómeno que se da en cuanto a la herencia africana que hay en nuestros países, y que fue el motivo del festival fílmico que se está llevando a cabo ahora, el festival de películas africanas, que se lleva a cabo cada año, ahora en su edición número 16 en el campus de Cascade, del colegio de la comunidad de Portland. Allí hubo algunas conversaciones muy interesantes y bueno, quisiera que nos platicaras también un poco de eso.
Bien. Mira, primero, no hay que olvidar que la Nueva España comprendía desde la parte norte de acá hasta la Tierra del Fuego.
Uh-huh.
Entonces, todos teníamos aproximadamente la misma educación. La misma educación emanaba del norte al sur o del sur al norte, dependiendo los movimientos. En el caso específico de Guatemala, en relación a lo que estamos hablando del tema de la africanidad, debido a un planteamiento de gobierno. Si el primer gobierno guatemalteco, después de la independencia, que es cuando empieza el problema de lo que estamos viviendo ahorita, es cuando se crean las narraciones de las naciones. Al irse a España, quedan todos los lugares prácticamente sin identificación. Entonces, se crean los programas de san nacionalismo. ¿Qué es ser un guatemalteco? Y entonces, la generación del 20 en Guatemala, en la cual pertenece Miguel Ángel Asturias, de acuerdo a Marta Casaos, que es una escritora guatemalteca, descubre que la mentalidad de 1920 es la que todavía rige a la población guatemalteca del presente. Y al hacer un estudio un poco extenso de estas personas, nos enteramos que eran de la mentalidad eugenista. El eugenista creía que al mezclar la sangre masivamente se purificaban a las otras razas. Por eso la tesis de Miguel Ángel Asturias, El problema social del indio, él propone la eliminación del indígena a través de una mezcla masiva con los escandinavos. Al estudiar quiénes fueron los profesores de Miguel Ángel Asturias, descubrimos que Vasconcelos es uno de los principales asesores de su tesis. Entonces amarramos la mentalidad de la raza de bronce en México al movimiento eugenista guatemalteco, llevado ya a extremos más grandes, porque la propuesta de Miguel Ángel Asturias es más abierta a la propuesta de Vasconcelos, pero podemos ver la influencia, la eliminación por medio de mezclas blancas.
Sí, y dos preguntas. Según tengo yo entendido, la presencia africana en Guatemala ha sido muy, muy permanente.
Sí, mira, lo que sucede en Guatemala es que sucedió el mismo fenómeno también de lo que pasó mucho en los primeros años en México. Al no existir tanta la discriminación racial a los principios de la colonia, entonces hubo bastante mestizaje. En Guatemala, muchas personas, cuando tú hablas del negro en Guatemala, inmediatamente te señalan a Puerto Barrios. Porque en Puerto Barrios todavía se encuentran tribus garífunas, de la raza garífuna, que son los negros visibles. Pero ya viendo el Festival del Cine, que nosotros pudimos ver cómo está la transformación del negro visible, sí, en el mestizaje, podemos ver que en Guatemala es exactamente lo mismo, especialmente en las costas, donde hubo bastante corte de caña, de...
Sí, porque esas eran las ocupaciones para las cuales se empleaba la labor africana, ¿no es cierto? Claro. Una pregunta, ¿Puerto Barrios está en la costa?
Puerto Barrios es la parte atlántica. Ajá. Y en la parte atlántica hay un lugar que es reconocido por ser habitado por la raza garífuna, que es Livingston, el Estor, toda esa parte tiene bastante influencia de la tribu garífuna, ¿no? Sí.
Y estas son tribus del oeste de África.
Son, exactamente.
Sí, incluso, curiosamente, hay un lugar que se llama, según vi en los mapas del documental, La raíz olvidada de este director que hizo un trabajo que nunca se había visto, ¿cómo se llamaba? Rafael Rebollar
Rafael
Corona.
Rebollar.
Sí, muy, muy interesante el video, y que también está disponible a través de la biblioteca de PCC. Quería yo mencionar Mandinga. Mandinga es un lugar famoso en Veracruz, en
Correcto.
México. Y allí en la costa atlántica de Guatemala, ¿qué palabras, qué cosas nos dan, nos están dando en qué cosas estamos viendo el legado africano a Latinoamérica?
Mira, como cosa increíble tenemos dos símbolos, digamos. En Guatemala, en la parte religiosa,
sí,
uno de los cristos más venerados es el Cristo Negro de Esquipulas.
Sí.
Claro, la iglesia dice que es el aparecimiento de un Cristo Negro. Hay escritores que piensan que fue para que el habitante de esa región se sintiera identificada físicamente con un Cristo, ¿no?
Sí, entonces lo pintaron de negro.
Entonces vino Quirio Cataño y lo esculpió negro. La otra cosa increíble es la manera en que el indígena ama la marimba, siendo la marimba un instrumento africano.
Sí.
La manera en que se comen las vísceras. Las vísceras también están reconocidas como comida que el africano introdujo en estas partes del continente.
Bueno, y cuando hablamos de la víscera, estamos hablando de lo que es la pancita, el mondongo.
Mondongo,
esa es una palabra africana.
Las terminaciones sí. Precisamente en eso, ¿verdad?
Sí. Mencionabas que algunos estudios lingüísticos muestran que las palabras que tienen NGO son de origen africano.
Exactamente.
Por ejemplo...
Mira, por ejemplo, en Guatemala se podría llegar a un montón de discusión porque en Guatemala está dividido entre Nangos y Yapas. Tú vas a la parte de tirando al noreste, agarrando para Puerto Barrios, y vas a encontrar los pueblos de Zacapa, Jalapa, Jutiapa. Y en la parte indígena de occidente, agarrando para Quetzaltenango, Mazatenango, sí. Viste, tienen las terminaciones
NGO, sí.
Ajá.
Qué interesante, porque la cuestión es que siempre, y curiosamente una de las asistentes al convivio, bueno, al diálogo que se abrió después de la exhibición de la película La Raíz Olvidada, de Rebollar Corona, una mujer, una de las asistentes dijo, pero ¿cómo voy a ir a mi pueblo, que ella era de la montaña, a decir que nuestro instrumento, o sea, lo que significa el ser guatemalteco o oaxaqueño, no recuerdo exactamente.
Era de Oaxaca ella.
Sí, que es de influencia negra.
Claro.
Entonces fue un shock tremendo.
Claro, porque mira, yo te podría hablar específicamente de Guatemala porque el primer presidente después de la independencia de Guatemala es un mulato.
Uh-huh.
Y gobierna Guatemala por 30 años.
Uh-huh.
Él es atacado por Inglaterra, por el representante inglés, y yo incluso encontré un documento del representante inglés cuando él se queja a Inglaterra y dice que Centroamérica, porque en ese entonces la influencia guatemalteca en Centroamérica era fuerte, porque Guatemala en la colonia fue la Capitanía General de Centroamérica.
Uh-huh.
Dice este señor inglés que estamos, dice, en manos de mulatos y gente de color, haciendo mención al gobierno que tenía Guatemala, ¿no?
O sea, devaluándolo.
Claro.
Devaluándolo, sí.
Entonces, después del derrocamiento de este presidente, leo yo, 100 años después, que la historia de él fue completamente ignorada y hasta cierto punto influenciados por los pensamientos modernistas, no se habló en las universidades de los 30 años que este mulato estuvo de presidente en Guatemala. Es la manera de borrar masivamente en la mentalidad de la gente nueva la influencia africana en esos países.
Pero entonces, o sea, dos preguntas. ¿En qué forma se crea este tipo de discurso nacionalista en el cual está bien? O sea, sabemos históricamente somos mezcla de dos razas, aunque, sin embargo, hay mucho más. Hay una diversidad tremenda.
Mira,
que se ha escondido.
Mira, Juárez Muñoz, en el libro de Marta Casaus, hay una frase que si te pones a pensar, vas a encontrar la razón por la cual las personas del presente pensamos como pensamos. Juárez escribe que la zamba,
uh-huh,
y ni la zamba ni el indio pueden ser bases para un país civilizado.
Uh-huh.
Zamba, pues en Guatemala quiere decir negro. Y este señor es uno de los grandes pensadores del movimiento de la generación 20. Entonces, como resultado a este pensamiento de que ni la zamba ni el indio pueden ser bases de un país civilizado, encontramos un libro, por ejemplo, de Miguel Ángel Asturias, Mulata de Tal, donde en toda la narración a lo que lleva él es a eliminar al indio y a la mulata, que son dos personajes principales de la novela.
O sea que a través del arquetipo de la mulata y del indio, y al eliminarlos él está dando, o sea, una especie de modelo de qué es lo que debemos aspirar, a qué debemos de aspirar.
Exactamente, que viene a resultar la misma tesis que él había propuesto, la eliminación del indio a través de la mezcla, ¿no?, masiva.
Sí.
Pero en este caso elimina a la mulata y al indígena por medio de un terremoto, y la única persona que sobrevive del terremoto es el padre, y el padre ya sabemos que en esa época un padre religioso era precisamente representante de la corona, o sea, el pensamiento blanco.
Una cosa, ¿tenemos tiempo? ¿Tenemos
sí,
un poquito más de tiempo?
Claro que sí.
Quería yo preguntarte, y espero que no estemos cansando aquí a nuestros radioescuchas, pero nuevamente todas estas cuestiones son importantes en Buscando América, ¿verdad?
Exactamente.
Yo quería preguntarte un poquito sobre el desarrollo de esa identidad. Estamos hablando de Vasconcelos, que fue un filósofo de 1810, ¿mencionas?
Más o menos.
Sí. Pero entonces, o sea, estamos viendo una continuidad de pensamiento que lleva casi 100 años, ¿no?
Perdón, 1900.
1910, es lo que yo sabía.
Ajá.
Pero atrás de eso venían este movimiento en el cual en 1845, basado en el pensamiento de Voltaire de 1700,
claro.
El cual va desarrollando esta idea de la supremacía de los europeos, ¿no?
Claro. Sí, definitivamente, ¿no? Todo lo que nosotros... No hay que olvidar de que América Latina, desde que deja de pertenecer a la corona, se convierte en periferia.
Entonces, ¿en qué sentido?
En la periferia, ya que no son centros productores de pensamiento, sino que son influenciados.
O sea, colonizados.
¿No? Colonizados, sí. Exactamente. Fran Fanon dice que lo primero que va a hacer una persona, que Fran Fanon es uno de los psicólogos... que escribió Black...
Dilo en inglés y lo traducimos.
Sí, Black Mask, White Skin.
O sea, máscara negra, piel blanca.
Piel blanca. Entonces ahí él explica de que lo primero que se hizo pues fue quitar la lengua del colonizado, quitarle el idioma para ponerle nueva filosofía de la lengua del colonizador.
Estamos hablando del español en México, en Latinoamérica, claro. Estamos hablando del inglés en Estados Unidos.
En toda raza donde ha habido, en todo sí. Lugar, exactamente. Donde ha habido este colonizador, esa ha sido la idea siempre. Y fíjate que curiosamente los españoles cuando llegaron a México destruyeron todas las obras aztecas.
Sí.
En la parte del Medio Oriente, la quema de la Biblioteca de Alejandría fue también precisamente con esa mentalidad, o sea que es una repetición histórica.
Sí, pero me parece que en cierto modo los imperios actúan de la misma forma y no hay nada nuevo bajo el sol desde el tiempo de los hebreos. Perdóname.
Exactamente, eso sí. Es lo que sucede, ¿no? Es para poder agarrar a un cerebro y ponerlo en blanco sin historia. Y entonces empieza la historia desde ese momento que ya son colonizados.
Claro, pero entonces es una historia sin raíces. Si no sabes cuáles son tus raíces, ¿cómo vas a poder pensar en el futuro?
Claro, andas buscando a Apolo, andas buscando a la Venus de Mirlo en tu gente y somos de diferentes contextos físicos, ¿no? Pero en la mente se anda buscando la belleza helénica.
Sí.
Entre indígenas y eso es debido a la educación que se recibe, ¿no?
Sí, pero entonces, o sea, es un concepto idealizado, prestado.
Claro.
Y
claro.
En un idioma que en realidad ni siquiera es el nuestro. Y sobre esto quiero comentar que incluso Octavio Paz, en sus ya a los 80 años, al recibir el premio Nobel, el premio Nobel de Literatura, él mencionó que realmente nosotros estamos hablando en un idioma prestado, en este caso el español. Tenemos ya poco tiempo y quisiera yo, si no tenemos otra música, quisiera yo preguntar...
Ándele, pues sí. Esto es muy interesante para nosotros.
Gracias. Quisiera yo preguntar un poquito sobre los estudios que se están llevando a cabo sobre esta africanía y la historia y las raíces. Yo sé que tú eres uno de los estandartes.
Gracias.
Que cursaste tus estudios en PSU y quisiera que nos hablaras un poquito de este movimiento a nivel local y también las conexiones con México y con Latinoamérica y el despertar que se está llevando a cabo ahora en estos países. Mira, acerca de la africanía.
Yo tuve la suerte de haber sido invitado al congreso el año pasado, al congreso de la africanidad que se llevó a cabo en Veracruz el año pasado, donde se reunieron escritores de casi toda América Latina. Vinieron escritores de Paraguay, de Costa Rica, de Cuba, el doctor Marco Polo Hernández, uno de los pioneros locales de acá, que está llevando estos estudios, pero a niveles que de verdad hay que quitarse el sombrero con el trabajo que le está haciendo. Pero volviendo a la pregunta, ahí me di cuenta yo de que hay un movimiento que precisamente uno de mis artículos empieza que el descascarar la educación antigua nos está dejando a nosotros ver exactamente lo que en verdad somos y no hemos podido aceptar porque no nos han dado la oportunidad de educarnos realmente con lo que pasó en la historia. Nos manipularon al grado de que muchas personas que nosotros vemos como eruditos en la educación, lamentablemente son ídolos de pie de barro, ¿no? No tienen una formación honesta de lo... Honesto dentro de ellos, sí, pero honesto de lo que pasó, ¿no?
Pero, ¿puedes mencionar nombres?
Fíjate, por favor, sí. Bueno, yo te podría hablar, simplemente te voy a hablar de lo que representó para mí hacerle una crítica a Miguel Ángel Asturias. Miguel Ángel Asturias, yo crecí con Miguel Ángel Asturias viéndolo como el premio Nobel Nacional, el orgullo nacional. Es a través de mis estudios donde me doy cuenta que él pertenece precisamente al pensamiento que siempre ha educado a la gente guatemalteca, que no tiene que ver nada con la realidad del pueblo guatemalteco. Había leído a Ciudad Letrada, Aldea Oral Ciudad Letrada, de otro guatemalteco, donde existe una defensa del robo de leyendas que otros acusan. Por ejemplo, Menchú acusa a Miguel Ángel Asturias. Menchú, también premio Nobel de la Paz. Nosotros tenemos la suerte de tener premio Nobel de Literatura y premio Nobel de la Paz, que son los dos contrastes de Guatemala, ¿no? Tenemos un pueblo de casi 60% de analfabetas y tenemos premio Nobel de Literatura. Vivimos 30 años en guerra y tenemos premio Nobel de la Paz, ¿no? Sí. Que es bastante. Entonces tú puedes ver que a través de estos ídolos que nosotros tenemos, que es, continúa la proyección del pensamiento helénico. No, nada que ver con la identificación del verdadero guatemalteco. Y haciendo un estudio general de todos los movimientos que han pasado literalmente o literáticamente en Guatemala, desde los naturalistas hasta los modernistas, siempre ha habido un desprecio en sus escrituras hacia el verdadero habitante guatemalteco.
¿Y esto se está componiendo en la literatura contemporánea? ¿Hay escritores que tengan otras voces o seguimos nuevamente en la misma línea de pensamiento que todo lo de afuera, o sea, lo que se le llama en México el malinchismo, que es la adoración del modelo europeo y la negación de nosotros como gente, con una voz independiente, con una manera diferente de ver las cosas y una opinión diferente también?
Sí, yo creo definitivamente de que sí se está llevando a cabo un gran movimiento, especialmente Cuba. Cuba ha logrado tratar más abierto este tema que para nosotros todavía ha sido un tabú, el reconocernos como somos. Entonces Cuba ha dado varios escritores de esta índole. Lamentablemente, el sistema educacional principal, la corriente educativa, todavía no ha abrazado esta clase de libros. Imagínate si en Estados Unidos, donde existe todavía un poco de mentalidad un poco más abierta, y te digo un poco nada más porque en PSU, a pesar de todos los esfuerzos que se hicieron, hasta el año pasado se logró que el departamento africano o de estudios africanos, de Black Studies, pudiera otorgar una licenciatura. Cuando yo estudié solamente llegábamos a minor studies. No podías continuar. Y se supone que PSU es una de las universidades más libres de aquí, que ha abrazado las minorías. Entonces, en los países de nosotros, que vamos por lo menos unos 70, 80 años en vanguardia, para que exista este reconocimiento va a tomar un poco de más tiempo. Pero ya los libros se están haciendo, ¿no?
Sí, es cuando ellos de habla inglés, entonces podemos repetir, porque estamos hablando de puntos muy importantes ya.
Yes, for those of our listeners, our English-speaking listeners, we are interviewing today, we have with us today Jacobo Páez, who has a master's in literary criticism with specialization in the black image in Central America. And we're discussing some of the themes about the national image, et cetera, in Central America as a result of the recent visit of filmmaker Rafael Rebollar Corona and Dr. Marinés Velázquez, who's a researcher in themes of Africanness in Mexico. And then Jacobo has a lot to say about this development and these issues in Central America. So
yeah, we were also talking about the Writers' Conference, and that was really interesting to me. So can we do a recap on that?
Okay, Emira, we went to Veracruz last year. We were invited through the Africana Studies, and we had a lot of writers from Latin America. I mentioned you, there was a Paraguayan writer, there was a Costa Rican writer, a few Cuban writers, Mexico, the keynote speaker that was here, that's how I met her, because she was presenting her work over there, too.
Right, the Dr. Maria Elisa Velázquez.
Elisa Velázquez. And so it is tremendous movements. And like I was saying, it is going to take more time because the central education in Latin America still hasn't embraced this kind of work.
Right.
And that's something that came up as a side thing to the conference discussion, I guess, was this the comic books that was passed
around.
Can you touch on that too?
Okay. For a lot of people, and even some of the college that we have, they don't believe, some of them, they don't believe that it was a damaging image. However,
The comic book, you mean the damaging images of what?
The black image on those comic books. Because it's the representation of the Sambo and the Aunt Jemima that was famous in the 47s in here. And Memín Pingüín, it was a comic book.
In Mexico.
In Mexico. In Central America, too.
Yeah.
And it really portrays the black character in that, in the kid as a Sambo, completely a Sambo, different, really characteristics of the Sambo, while the other persons, you see the mestizo, the white mestizo, really presented completely different. He was presented with no shoes, big lips, everything that we know that has been derogatory on the figures.
Right. And these are comic books. This is what's interesting. These are comic books that are circulating now.
Exactly.
Not only with nationwide distribution, but also, as Jacobo has mentioned, you know, the publishing industry in Mexico, the sort of comics, go way into Central America. And they're dear to many, many, many people. You know?
Sure. Yeah. And the problem was that they not only want to continue with this publication, but now they move this character into stamps. So now Mexico is going to send international envelopes with that figure in the envelope.
The postage stamp.
And
there was huge criticism. This happened during the conference in Veracruz, and I think that Dr. Marco Polo Hernandez was leading some of this discussion.
That is correct. Right. He wrote an article 2 years before this issue. He wrote an article on Memín Pingüín, so his article, when this issue came up in Mexico, it went through a lot of people, because it just happened that it was written 2 years before the event happened.
And I also wanted to say that one of the visiting sort of personalities in the literary world is Carlos Fuentes, who was there. And as I remember, could you tell us your impressions about the...
Well, you know, A figure is a figure, see? That's what is important. That's why it's important. See? You have somebody that is already visible, recognized, and there is attraction of more people to assist when you bring somebody that is already visible, recognized of his work. It was interesting. We questioned la muerte de
Artemio Cruz.
Artemio Cruz, el doctor Marco Polo Hernández cuestionó de que ese era precisamente el personaje negro.
In other words, he questioned that this was the black persona, the black personification.
Exactly. And one of the things that you gotta keep in mind, that whenever you read a book in Latin America that has an indigenous person or a black person, it's just like Hollywood. It's going to die. It's not going to succeed. It's going to get into liquor. It's going to get into a lot of problems, drugs, alcohol, and it's going to die at the end.
And we're talking about the book, The Death of Artemio Cruz by Carlos Fuentes.
Sure. And you can see it with Pito Perez. You can see it with different, like Mulata de Tal, Memorias de Mama Blanca. You can see it through Latin America, all the repetition of those images.
Right. You said that you have a number of books that are your favorites, and I'd like if you could share with us so that we can expand our reading.
Well, if you want to find out and you really want to see and start seeing Latin America the way that it's supposed to be seen, I recommend you to read an article of Richard Jackson. Richard Jackson wrote Latin America literature, and he gave us 5 or 6 points that if we really look through at this point of view, these books, you can see that there is a trend that starts from Mexico all the way to Chile and Argentina. No?
Right.
Everybody in Latin America... Mexico didn't have blacks, Guatemala doesn't have blacks, Argentina doesn't have blacks, Chilean doesn't have blacks, but the blacks were everywhere. Wherever you have Spaniards in there, there was somebody doing their work.
Right, and I think we can see that, you know, there's a legacy of music, you know, even in corrido, in the huapango, in the zapateado, in
tango.
Mexico. Tango?
Tango.
Wow. Well, we could be talking about this for about 6 hours. We already tried last week. We're about to
We've got a couple minutes
and
see if we can rush through this. Let me get Ivan.
Yes.
Jacobo. Let me get your take on the community discussion that took place. I'll say it. For me, I'm glad that that discussion took place. The question and answers. I'm happy with the panels and that. But. On the other hand, when I was there, I was feeling that there would have been a deeper discussion, you know, concerning, because we are in Northeast Portland, it took place in Northeast Portland, in the heart of I'll use the word, a cultural diverse community. And but I'm hoping that maybe this is a first step to something even deeper, to connect.
Right.
To make Latinos aware of ourselves, of our own. Ivan?
If I may, I'm going to say a brief statement. We don't have a lot of time right now, but I really, really hope, I agree with you that I hope that this is the beginning of a conversation of how the African-American community and the Latino community do intersect in a lot of points.
Yeah, and so often we're separated from each other. Right.
We have a lot of assumptions about our different point of views, our different historical, economic, you know, national pride, etc. But there's a lot in common if we dare to open up the Pandora's box.
Well, Pandora's box. I mean, it's a lot of issues in this discussion that could have taken place, and I hope we get to that point. But somebody said there, Jacobo, go ahead. You can get your take on this.
First of all, I was really pleased because of the dealing with the topic, not because of the deepness of the topic, but at least, you know, we have the first steps of seeing that we're not different, that there is a division that has been created in order for us to be separated. You know, and the problem, you can see the result in Los Angeles.
Riots. Los Angeles, Latino and blacks hate each other.
That's it.
Generally speaking.
That's it. Because it is promoted that way. That's the reason why there's this invisibility, so you cannot identify with the other group that you're fighting.
Okay. Well, I'm hoping that there'll be, one day there'll be experiential, take on this to, Ivan, to carry this conversation through to some
right.
really get at the core of this.
Right. You know. Although I think that it takes a lot of, you know, there's sort of issues that need to be discussed over and over again. It's really, really hard. You know, I could see people that were in shock about the materials that were being presented, about the, you know, about, you know, just grasping with the idea, you know, that we perhaps are more than what we believe we are.
Jacobo, Iván.
Thank you.
Amor, paz y más poesía.
Gracias, gracias
no?
por. Claro que sí.
Chao, nos Chao. Vemos.
Muchas
nos
gracias
vemos.
Por la invitación.
Gracias a ti.
Y los nobles mexicanos sentimos a la nación. Dicen que fue un gran combate, largas horas sin cesar. Y disfrutamos la plaza el general Escobar. Cuántas noticias, señores, y varios corresponsales. Por los pertrechos de guerra que llevan los federales. Unas plazas no tenían resguardo para luchar. Pero allí fueron tomadas por las tropas de Escobar. Y siempre siguió con fuerza la grande revolución. Y se dice que ya alcanza a la ciudad de Torreón. Así se sabe, señores, en esta tierra tejana. Por la gran revolución de la patria mexicana. Las cuantas revoluciones en nuestra amada nación. Era por las votaciones.